to get me a history of France, in English, of course. He did so, and I was able to consider the history of the Anglo-French wars from both sides. I found it both a rewarding and a stimulating experience. A little later, chapters in my history textbooks on such topics as the Crusades and the Eastern Question raised similar questions. Here too, my bar mitzvah marked a turning point. Like most other bar mitzvah boys, I received a number of presents, one of which was an outline of Jewish history, a subject about which I previously knew very little. My eager and immediate reading of this book brought me to such fascinating and exotic places as Moorish Cordova, Baghdad under the Caliphs, and Ottoman Istanbul. These were no doubt the first steps on the path which led to my career as an historian of the Middle East. The degree structure at the University of London at that time made it possible for me to take an honours, that is to say, specialised degree in history, with special reference to the Middle East. This enabled me to continue my linguistic adventures and at the same time to find my true vocation as a historian. As far as I know, there was no comparable undergraduate program available at any other university at the time. I therefore chose that university and that syllabus, choices and opportunities for which I remain profoundly grateful. After some years of study in Middle Eastern history and languages at the School of Oriental, later also and African Studies in the University of London, my professor, the late Sir Hamilton Gibb, summoned me and said, "You have now been studying the Middle East for 4 years. Don't you think it's time you saw the place?" A travelling fellowship from the Royal Asiatic Society, given to me on Professor Gibb's recommendation, enabled me to follow his advice, and in the academic year 1937-1938, I set out on my first trip to the Middle East. My first port of call was Egypt. Arriving, by sea of course, at Port Said, I remembered the English Arabist Edward Lane's description of his first arrival in the region, whose language and culture had so fascinated him. As he put it, "I felt like a Muslim bridegroom meeting the bride with whom he is to spend the rest of his life, and seeing her for the first time after the wedding." At first, communication was not easy. Though the syllabus and the courses I attended included modern history, my main interest was in the period that in European history is called medieval, a term not very appropriate to the great age of Arab and Islamic civilization. My language studies followed the same line. When I arrived in Egypt, the only Arabic I knew was classical Arabic, which was about as useful for conversation as Ciceronian Latin would be in present-day Naples. But I managed to acquire some colloquial Arabic and enrolled as an auditor in Cairo University. I did what students usually do, attended lectures and meetings, read books and newspapers, talked and, more especially, listened, and on one occasion even attended a student demonstration. I can no longer recall for what cause. From Egypt, I travelled extensively in Palestine, Syria, Lebanon and Turkey, and in the early summer of 1938, returned to London, where I settled down to serious work. My main task during that period was study rather than research, though I did manage to make some progress in the collection of materials for my dissertation, which I completed after my return to England. In 1938, the University of London offered me a position as an assistant lecturer in Islamic history. The first class I taught in 1938 consisted of 4 students. 3 Arabs and an Iranian. I remember my father asking me in wonderment at the time why the University of London would pay me a salary to teach Arab history to Arabs. Many others have asked more or less the same question in a variety of forms. Some also asked why Arab students would come to England to study their own history and were given, by both the students and their teachers, a variety of answers. For whatever reasons, they continued to come, and for the rest of my teaching career in England, a varying number of my undergraduate students and a steady majority of my graduate students were Arabs from Arab countries. A year after my appointment, war broke out,